It was like the whistling of a piccolo many times magnified, shrill and shriller till it keened with the terror of a lost soul and filled the room with the piercingness of itself. And when it died into nothingness, Herbie collapsed into a huddled heap of motionless metal. Bogart's face was bloodless. He's dead. No. Susan Calvin burst into body-racking gusts of wild laughter. Not dead. Merely insane. I confronted him with the insoluble dilemma, and he broke down. You can scrap him now. Because he'll never speak again. Lanning was on his knees beside the thing that had been Herbie. His fingers touched the cold, unresponsive metal face, and he shuddered. You did that on purpose. He rose and faced her, face contorted. What if I did? You can't help it now. And in a sudden access of bitterness, he deserved it. The director seized the paralyzed, motionless Bogart by the wrist. What's the difference? Come, Peter. He sighed. A thinking robot of this type is worthless anyway. His eyes were old and tired, and he repeated, Come, Peter. It was minutes after the two scientists left that Dr. Susan Calvin regained part of her mental equilibrium. Slowly her eyes turned to the living, dead Herbie, and the tightness returned to her face. Long she stared while the triumph faded and the helpless frustration returned, and of all her turbulent thoughts, only one infinitely bitter word passed her lips. Liar. That finished it for them, naturally. I knew I couldn't get any more out of her after that. She just sat there behind her desk, her white face cold and remembering. I said, Thank you, Dr. Calvin. But she didn't answer. It was 2 days before I could get to see her again. Little Lost Robot. When I did see Susan Calvin again, it was at the door of her office. Files were being moved out. She said, How are your articles coming along, young man? Fine, I said. I had put them into shape according to my own lights, dramatized the bare bones of her recital, added the conversation and little touches. Would you look over them and see if I haven't been libelous or too unreasonably inaccurate anywhere? I suppose so. Shall we retire to the executive's lounge? We can have coffee. She seemed in good humor, so I chanced it as we walked down the corridor. I was wondering, Dr. Calvin, yes, if you would tell me more concerning the history of robotics. Surely you have what you want, young man. In a way. But these incidents I have written up don't apply much to the modern world. I mean, there was only one mind-reading robot ever developed, and space stations are already outmoded and in disuse, and robot mining is taken for granted. What about interstellar travel? It's only been about 20 years since the hyperatomic motor was invented, and it's well known that it was a robotic invention. What is the truth about it? Interstellar travel. She was thoughtful. We were in the lounge, and I ordered a full dinner. She just had coffee. It wasn't a simple robotic invention, you know. Not just like that. But, of course, until we developed the brain, we didn't get very far. But we tried. We really tried. My first connection, directly that is, with interstellar research was in 2029, when a robot was lost. Measures on hyperbase had been taken in a sort of rattling fury, the muscular equivalent of an hysterical shriek. To itemize them in order of both chronology and desperation, they were 1. All work on the hyperatomic drive through all the space volume occupied by the stations of the 27th asteroidal grouping came to a halt. 2. That entire volume of space was nipped out of the system, practically speaking. No one entered without permission. No one left under any conditions. 3. By special government patrol ship, Doctors Susan Calvin and Peter Bogart, respectively, head psychologist and mathematical director of United States Robot and Mechanical Men Corporation, were brought to Hyperbase.